Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday, December 3rd edition of the Citizens Involvement Committee. Last time we met was in July of 2015 on the 16th. And today we've got a couple of interesting things for you, as well as just want to touch on a few progress-type things. So last meeting, you'll see Attachment 2A, the minutes, talked a lot about the North Hill Better Block, as well as the Akron Property Inventory Report. If you remember, Kyle Julian from the East Akron Development Corporation, or East Akron Neighborhood Development Corporation, was here to speak a little bit about those things. So that's just a summary for you to review of where we were last week. I think maybe if we go around the room and introduce ourselves just so everybody knows who everybody is. I'm Curtis Baker, Transportation Administrator for AMATS.
Hello, Heather Riegel with AMATS.
Seth Bush with AMATS.
Krista Benston with AMATS.
William Hackey, CIC member.
Dustin Baker, CIC member.
Robert Coletta.
Gene Pizzell, City Planner with AMATS.
Joel Helms, citizen.
Fred Wise, CIC member and Akron Bike Club.
Per Johnson, citizen, and one of the founders of a group called Streets for All. It's a safe streets advocacy group.
Carrie Prater, AMATS.
All right, so welcome everybody. Like usual, we've got a couple things. Unfortunately, discussion item A will actually be, I believe Krista's going to be taking this item. Chad Root from ODOT had some family issues, was not able to make it, so Krista's going to talk a little bit about that. Before we get into that, I just wanted to see if everyone had heard about the FAST Act, which is the new transportation bill that was just passed in the House today. It was about 359 to, I think, 60 or something like that in terms of the vote. It's expected to go to the Senate early next week, and the President has already said that he will sign the bill. So it's positive in that regard. It's 5 years of a fully funded federal transportation bill, which, as many of you know, funds our activities as well as the programs that we fund to invest in infrastructure. It's been sort of interesting. Some of the positives are is that they are kind of supporting local government agencies like our MPO over the next 5 years. They usually split funding, STP funding, 50-50, so 50% goes to the states and 50% goes to local agencies. Over the next 5 years, every year they're going to increase the percentage 1% towards local agencies. So by the end of the five-year bill, it'll actually be a 55% locals, 45% DOTs. So a lot of the regional advocates were pretty pleased with that, even though it is a small amount. It actually calculates to over like $3.4 billion more towards locals. So that's positive. On the negative end, the biggest discussion point has been how they're funding it. Basically, a lot of, I don't want to say hocus pocus, but borrowing from surpluses from the Federal Reserve, as well as some other, it sounds like, interesting monetary machinations or something like that to provide the 300 and some billion dollars of infrastructure improvements. So the good news is that for the next 5 years, we know we're fully funded. In some ways, the bad news is that AMATS is already soliciting for projects for 2021, which is 6 years from now. Regardless, I think it's a step in the right direction. A lot of the policy didn't appear to change. Some interesting things that might affect local governments is that there's a program called the TIFIA program, which is an acronym, but basically what it is, it's a federal program that will lend money for large-scale projects to states and to local governments. Typically, those projects have been, it has to be at least a $50 million project to be able to take advantage of that financing opportunity through the feds. They've lowered that to $10 million instead of $50. So what that actually will do is, say, a city like Akron now potentially could use that as a funding mechanism to say if they wanted to reconstruct, you know, Main Street from Cuyahoga Falls all the way down to the All-America Bridge, which would be a $15 million project, they could actually apply for financing, a low-interest loan financing, similar to like a bonding, which it just opens it up. You know, not every community and local agency has a $50 million project waiting to be done. So that's an exciting thing. I guess on the negative side, other than the funding, I think people felt like there wasn't enough emphasis on innovation. Not a lot of push when it comes to things like, the technological advances that are coming down the pike for transportation. Bill was talking about this before the meeting, even about, you know, the idea that pretty soon we're going to have autonomous, you know, we could have autonomous trucks, autonomous cars, things like that. You know, with the technology, even from smartphone technology to ITS technology, there felt like there wasn't enough push on that from the bill. And a lot of the bill is largely status quo for things. But it does kind of give us an uptick in funding slightly over the five-year period compared to the last bill, which was only a two-year bill. But like I said, the Senate's expected to pass it next week, and then the president is expected to sign it. So, quite honestly, the last time we had a five-year bill was in 2006. It was the year I started at AMATS. So at that time, everyone said, transportation bills, they're always bipartisan. They always get signed. They're always 5 years, 6 years. And ever since then, I thought I jinxed it because I thought we'd never see one again. So that's pretty exciting. If anybody has any questions on that or comments, it'd be a good time to address that now. Any thoughts?
I don't see why they still didn't raise the federal gas tax.
Yeah.
Should have been done. I'll talk to my dude up there and say.
There were comments.
Do it.
There were comments on the floor today before the passage of the bill that a lot of the reps were saying, this gives us the time we need to discuss, you know, a real policy for funding the trust fund going forward. But there's been a lot of commentary already that said this idea of, you know, a user tax as a gas tax is dead. You know, some people think we're never going to go back to that, but it's just going to continue to be these general fund pumpings, and that's really, I think, unfortunate.
I think, Curtis, that you're going to be lucky if you see it funding hold up for even 3 years, because the funny things they did with that aren't going to last from other people.
Yeah. It's you know, it's like you take what, I mean, it's good, but it's still, there's a lot of mystery in sort of how it's going to work. And I think the original proposal from the Senate was to do a six-year bill with only 3 years funded. And then the House, with this Federal Reserve surplus, was like, no, we can do a full 5 year. They want to do a full 6 year compromise, I think, was a full 5 years. So, but it's unfortunate. I mean, and really, that amount of money and what we need is probably that amount of money over 6 years to be condensed to like a 2 or 3 year period. That's the level of funding we should be at in terms of really being able to maintain our existing system. If there aren't any other comments, we'll go towards Krista over here to talk about the statewide and U.S. bicycle map here.
Yeah, I apologize. Chad was planning on coming, and then he had a few things come up, so he couldn't make it. But in your packet, you should have this lovely little sheet, which kind of, in general, explains it. Essentially, ODOT has been talking about this for several years, but they are doing federal and statewide bike route designations. I think the goal of it really is to, you know, their priorities are to use trails where they can, but the majority of it will be on road. But I think it really is to, you know, sign it very well, make improvements to those routes as that goes along, and really have these kind of corridors and capture that, you know, recreational travel. I think we're seeing recreational bike travel, you know, these trips that are anywhere from a day or two to, you know, a couple of weeks across, you know, getting that people coming through our state, coming and staying at these places, and really capturing that. What they did was they identified urban centers with people greater than 50,000, and then they started to look at how can we connect those with different routes, especially, like I said, using existing trails and bike things that they already had. And then they had a computer system that went through and kind of combined, you know, based on the ADTs and the shoulder widths, what they thought would be the best. And so that kind of gives us, and I apologize, Chad had a big poster size, nice map. These I printed out online. But this map that they have, the one that's more zoomed in shows Akron in general. And if you look, you know, the towpath is the main spine running north-south on the left side. And then the computer had thrown out the main part of this is Talmadge Road just south of 76. So we've already talked to them, and I think the plan is to, you know, Kent is a major destination that I think a lot of people would like to be in, and there's the trail. So that northern route is going to hop up to Kent and, you know, utilize the Freedom and the Portage bike and hike. I think where there's still a lot of questions and where we have concerns is the southern route that kind of goes along Market Street and heads out through Lake Moore, Mogador, and then comes south and heads down. And I think that we were looking at, you know, is there something more in the Clinton, Norton, Barberton area where we have more of a southern, through southern Summit County that would kind of be an east-west connection. So I think that's the one that, you know, especially like if anyone has any ideas or rides a lot there or just certain roads, you know, there's some that are good, but some that are, you know, there's not a direct great route. But so I think, you know, that's one thing. That's kind of where they are now. If you go to ODOT's website, and I believe this should give the website. If not, I'll make sure we send it out tomorrow. They have some of the routes, and they're looking for comments and feedback on the whole system. They are, you know, if it goes through a community, they will need legislation from that community, just saying that a community wouldn't do anything to hurt that route, but they don't necessarily have to do anything to help. ODOT would help pay for signs. But I think, you know, we definitely see this as something that's a great, is a nice push from ODOT, and, you know, just is a help to start, establish more of those bike trails and really on road through Akron, or not through Akron, but through, you know, the whole state in our area, and as a way that we can capture a lot of people coming through. So I believe that is most of the basics. I don't know, does anybody have any questions or kind of thoughts at the moment?
Are they looking to take right away from these routes, or they have obviously the towpath they already have?
No, I think what they would do is they would pick what they think is the best route now. If it's a state route, you know, that ODOT maintains, whenever they do something, they would look to, you know, at minimum do a wider shoulder if they couldn't do something else, but, you know, improve it for biking in particular. If it goes, you know, roads that aren't theirs, I think they would encourage, or they said at this point, potentially help pay for improvements, you know, if a city or a county wanted to make an improvement to a road that was designated. The only thing they were asking is that nobody would downgrade anything. But so they're not looking to...
You mean like in level of service?
Yeah, or, I mean, they just use the terminology, you know, that would make it worse for biking. So I think, you know, like decreasing the shoulder or, you know, mm-hmm. I think, I mean, most of these are more major routes, but, you know, I think, you know, going to Chip and Seal or something like that is things that they would be looking at. But no, so I mean, I think it would be, it's more a project to project basis if they would need right of way. I think it was just, you know, like designating these, sign it, you know, and then as projects come up or as roads need things, especially that are all in the designated bike routes, improve them for, you know, cyclists, but in cars as well.
First, are we restricting this to state roads, or are they talking about county roads too?
County, yeah.
Anything that's.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that when they're looking for recommendations, like anything goes. And especially like, if anyone would want to sit down in more detail sometime and talk about it, like instead of looking at, you know, looking through New Franklin and Green and thinking about are there routes, you know, rather than having these kind of two right from the center of Akron. But yeah, I think there's no road that's
692
off.
There's a. I'm sorry. There's a. A map called Strava,
mm-hmm.
Which cyclists use to map their routes and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see
where what they're using.
The heat maps, what are being used most frequently by those people who are using it.
You say Strata or Strava?
Strava, Strava, just as a guide. And from looking at it, there's no one going through the route they're suggesting right now.
Yeah. And I think these two were kind of like the what the computer spit out.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I think like Chad Root is District 4 bike coordinator, but I think they cover, what, five counties? So I think he's kind of said, you know, he needs help to, especially like the local roads, to know that's a good,
yeah,
that'd be a good tool.
Fred, does ABC, do you guys have any hesitation when you're going through Talmadge Circle? Is it typically avoided?
I don't know any route that we take that goes through Talmadge Circle. We can go around it.
Yeah. So there's no. Yeah. And then you guys, what do your members feel about roundabouts in general? Which
I don't
is
really
not Talmadge Circle.
Roundabouts.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the one at the Smith Road on Riverside
is
very easy for us to get through. Uh-huh. It works very well. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've never tried doing Talmadge. I don't know that I would.
Yeah.
There's others that have been the smaller ones.
Yeah.
I think are very good for getting through.
Yeah.
We don't have a problem with it.
Okay.
Are we looking at this, or is ODOT 4 looking at this, just as bicyclists on a street slash road? Should there be any attempt to hook up the bicyclists with a bus stop area, so if you want to take your bike to an area, get off, and then follow a path, bike path, or be on a bike path and say, I'm ready to hang it up, what's my next area where I can hook up with a bus and go, whatever, get home or get out of the weather if the weather changes, would that be of use to hook the two maps together?
I think it would be of use, and it's not something they're looking at
right now, so far
in the development of this, but I think especially once they get this established, it would be, you know, I think good to see how it overlays with, like, if you wanted to take the bus, or like you said, go one way and come back, or that kind of thing. I think it would.
Actually, that would be an excellent thing for the bus companies to put out, because there's a lot of situations where, particularly on my situation, I don't want to go too far because I got
to
ride back.
You have to go back. But
if I knew I could go someplace and catch a bus back, that would make it a much easier.
I would.
I don't know the bus schedule.
I don't know. You'd have to almost plot the bus routes and the stops.
And that wouldn't be a bad idea.
You know, and then compare, I don't know, like I say, Talmadge Road. Pick on it because it's easy and it's sort of out of the way. And you could put something out there. But if you wanted to go out to Rootstown and then bring a bus back, if there was a bus stop there coming back in Akron.
That actually makes sense.
It would be nice if we had inter-county bus.
Well, it would be nice because in your situation in Hudson, you've got that bus stop that's right at Route 8 and 303. Mm-hmm. Anybody that rides the bike on Hike Trail
can
ride up there and get the bus back in Akron. Yeah.
I think it might appeal more if we tried to interconnect the two, not every bus stop, but something on a bike map where this Strava system that says, here's a good bus stop, and here's where to get it on your smartphone and figure out when the bus is coming.
Well, that fits in, too, with what they're planning to do with the Freedom Trail. When they bring it into downtown, they'll eventually be putting it into the bus station now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would connect to a lot of that.
Yeah, you could go out somewhere and bicycle back then. I'm saying, I don't want to see us pin down bike paths without sort of nodding to PARTA and RTA and say, you'd get more riders if you could do this, if we had certain stops that have a big bicycle sign or something.
Any other comments or thoughts on the state's effort? Like Krista said, I think it's good that the state's looking at this and thinking about it and just thinking about a statewide system. I think it does help us, but in some ways I think it more helps them to get familiar with what we're doing in terms of the bike and, you know, and the regional planning that we're doing. So I think that's positive from that perspective.
And I'll make sure to send out that link. And then if you have any comments, I can make sure to get them to Chad Root, or I'll send out his email too.
Yeah. Well, if you get a copy of
mm-hmm. All right, next we're going to go to Kerry Prater. He's going to talk a little bit about the 2015 pedestrian plan.
You all should find attachment 4A in your folder. The 2015 pedestrian plan is an update of the original pedestrian plan that we prepared 3 years ago. The new plan seeks to build upon our original plan. In developing this item, we had two purposes. First, We wanted to provide a significant planning resource for communities that are considering pedestrian improvements within their respective areas. And secondly, we wanted to craft a broad vision statement identifying what sort of pedestrian networks that we feel that we should be pursuing as a region. As we prepared this item, we identified three areas of improvement for the greater Akron area's pedestrian systems. And they were, in terms of safety, connectivity, and vibrancy, and I'll address each of these briefly. Safety is a major consideration for pedestrians as they make the choice whether to walk along or across the roadway. The need for safe pedestrian systems in our area, I think, is underscored by our 2010-2012 pedestrian crash report. Now, in that report, we found that of the 459 pedestrian vehicle crashes that occurred in our region during that period, 86% of those resulted in an injury. 11% resulted in a fatality. Clearly, we can do better as a region in terms of pedestrian safety. And what we're doing is we're urging communities to consider three safety improvement practices, and those are road diets, sidewalks, and crosswalks. And details about each of these strategies are contained in the plan update. With regards to connectivity, the second area of improvement, connectivity refers to the extent that pedestrian networks such as streets, trails, and sidewalks actually link people to their destinations. Direct connections encourage travel by foot rather than by car. The plan update addresses some of the suburban connectivity issues in our region, and we're actively encouraging communities to consider adopting a mix of pedestrian-friendly land use designs. We're hoping to avoid situations such as we currently have in Montrose. We don't want to repeat that. We want to try to make that area better if we can. The third area of improvement, and it's quite possibly my favorite, concerns vibrancy. Vibrancy concerns making the experience of walking an enjoyable one. We at AMATS believe that our pedestrian networks should invite people to walk, not merely accommodate them. And this can be accomplished through such strategies as, again, mixing pedestrian-friendly land use designs, but also a mix of pedestrian-friendly parking designs, public art, street furniture, wayfinding signage, landscaping, streetscaping. Excellent examples already in place here in our region can be found up in Cuyahoga Falls at the Portage Crossing area and also out in Kent's Acorn Alley areas. We don't necessarily think communities have to replicate those to a T, but those are just fine examples of what they could refer to and implement. And I'll get to implementation tools in a minute. The plan does have adequate amounts of data. We do have analyses of existing conditions of our current pedestrian network, along with forecasts regarding unfolding trends, especially with regards to population and employment. Other data included in our plan include the sidewalk inventory, which has been updated to 2015, and also there's references again to the pedestrian crash report that I mentioned earlier. Currently, there are four implementation tools available to communities that are considering pursuing pedestrian improvements. We didn't just prepare a feel-good item as a PR stunt. We actually outlined how people can pursue these ideas. And among the four implementation strategies are the abundance of connecting of complete street principles, and the AMATS Connecting Communities Initiative, the AMATS Transportation Alternatives Program, which will actually provide funding for various pedestrian improvements, provided they meet certain criteria, and the Safe Routes to School Program. The 2015 pedestrian plan has been available for review and comment on our website since November the 6th. We sent out notices to all of our committee members and also the area media announcing its availability. We are considering tonight's meeting part of our public outreach, and we'd welcome any comments or concerns you folks might have, and we'll relay them up the line to the policy committee. If the policy committee approves this during its December meeting, it will be used as an input into the development of the upcoming regional transportation plan. And if you have any comments or concerns or anything, we'd be glad to address those now. It's Mr. Colletti.
Well, I can tell you personally, I live in Bath Township, and I drive Route 18 on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And the pedestrian situation, I'm glad you mentioned, because it's a disaster waiting to happen. Personal experience is you have the restaurant workers working, living in apartments mm-hmm. on Restaurant Hill, walking to work further down by Acme, I barely missed a guy by probably 3 inches. He was wearing black restaurant clothing mm-hmm. right under the 277 underpass. I mean, it was really scary. I felt bad for the guy because all he's trying to do is get home to work. So that's, I don't know what your priorities are. I'm not familiar with your plan because I'm not involved in the committee, but it's got to be a top priority out there. I mean, I'm sure if they haven't gotten killed, they will be killed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a bad situation because of those apartments up on Restaurant Hill. That's where a lot of them are living. And they're trying to walk down to work.
Yeah, you know, we see that too with just the busing. People are getting dropped yeah. off kind of just in the grass, in the median, mm-hmm. And then working their way through parking lots or trying to cross the street. And with the hours that they're working, if it gets past a certain time and they're working late, there is no transit. So they're, you know, at that point, yeah, they're, it's. And then, and you know, we walked it one time, just some staff, and you get close to the 77 underpass, it is. It's scary. Like, you don't want to. I mean, you just don't feel like anybody can see you. Yeah. You know, it's and you can't unless you're wearing reflective clothing. And but the cars are going 50 miles an hour.
I mean, yeah, literally, so. This guy was dressed in all black. Mm-hmm. He was a kitchen worker, yeah. and he was just either heading or going home from work. I can't remember which, but it was all dark. It was a very, very bad situation. Yeah. And again, the people getting dropped off and crossing. Route 18 and West Market Street, whatever it's called there, I've had to avoid mm-hmm. pedestrians many times. So I'm glad that you're working on that. I mean, it's a bad situation.
Yeah.
Was no thought given to people actually walking down that street?
You mean in terms of like if they, was yeah. there any ever thought about putting sidewalks
yeah,
in?
Yeah, advanced planning.
I'm yeah, when they,
concept.
Yeah, back with, I mean, you know, a lot of that was sold off as like, you know, it was parceled out and sold to developers. And so at that time, there was no consideration given. And then there was an opportunity when they widened that whole stretch, which I believe was either in the late 90s or early 2000s. And ODOT at the time said, no, you know, we don't want to put the sidewalks in. And now actually in front of AMATS, as Carrie mentioned, the Transportation Alternatives Program that we helped fund, Bath and Copley put in an application to install a sidewalk on the north side. Now that would only be from Cleveland Massillon to Springside, you know, so that wouldn't cover the underpass part, but it would be sort of the first step in making a connection because there's nothing out there right now. So we're hoping that will score well and get funded through our process because the communities are willing to, you know, and that's where I think we have an issue with townships. In particular, sometimes they don't have as strong of a voice when it comes to state roads and county roads because they don't have the same administrative structure as, you know, cities and villages even. So we're hopeful that there will be now retroactively there is enough room on the north side to get a sidewalk in. So that's the hope is that we can do it. So
it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read the report. But I will provide some comments, obviously.
We'd welcome those.
Thanks. I did read Smart Growth America put out a plan called Dangerous by Design.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you guys have seen that, but that looks at the Akron area pedestrian experience and Ohio as a state. And by and large, seniors over 65 and minorities are more at risk for pedestrian fatalities. And I'm not sure if there's any comments or ideas as ways to help mitigate some of that in this report, but that might be something to consider. I'll look at that report when I look into it. Obviously, there's a number of factors that go into both of those.
Well, this report, I don't know if it's on a related issue. We do touch upon transportation equity, which is a concept or a concern that's been growing in the nation or awareness thereof. And we're asking communities to consider the impacts of their pedestrian networks in their poorer neighborhoods, their poorer regions, how well people are connected to grocery stores and clinics and so forth. Maybe you remember during our annual meeting, James Hardy, I don't know if you attend our annual meeting, James Hardy spoke about food deserts, and he mentioned other types of deserts. We are addressing that kind of a topic, so maybe that's a step in the right direction, so to speak.
Yeah, we should look at those numbers, too, and make sure we can cite that. So,
Roadmaps, you mentioned as one of the three infrastructure tools that you would suggest to improve safety if you look at the Copy Road Diet. You also mentioned site crosswalks.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few crosswalks along that road diet stretch. Mm-hmm. So I would perhaps suggest that road diets have data collection before and after, and ways to go in after the project's completed to improve them for the pedestrian or the driver or the biker, whatever the mode needs, whatever the data shows there. But I would suggest that Copy Road certainly needs some more crosswalks, at least in the stretch that's been completed so far, and if there's talk about extending that road diet, to think about that as well. And those are some just general thoughts I have at the moment. As I mentioned, I'll circulate the report to the rest of the Streets for All group for comments as well.
If looking at any of these projects from an AMAS standpoint, if you're going to fund some of the original projects, what are the criteria that you are using to rate a pedestrian oriented project?
It's a good question, and actually I made a note based on an email from Pear earlier that we need to have that as a appendix. We should put that as an appendix as the scoring criteria of our transportation alternatives program. But basically, you know, there's a few criteria. Projected level of use is one of the big ones in terms of, and that's very much when we look at you kind of take say 18 projects apply, and you say okay, you almost more rank them in terms of level of use. You obviously. Projecting pedestrian usage is a little bit challenging sometimes because it's an if you build it, they'll come. But so we look at, you know, kind of estimated level of use based on the demographics and goat paths and things like that. We look at the safety of the how many accidents there have been in the past few years and any data that, you know, we do our data reports that Carrie mentioned, but we also ask the communities to provide if they have any specific crash reports of incidents that have happened more recently, they'll provide those. So those go up in scale in terms of how many points they get per project. Then we look at things like, are they on a transit line? Because we like, especially if there's a transit line in the area, we'd like to have a sidewalk with the transit line, obviously, especially if it's, you know, you're talking about an Arlington Road or something like that. You want sidewalks there. Bath's another good example at Montrose. Then we give some extra points if it's part of our Connecting Communities initiative, if it's been recommended in that project or that process, or then also Safe Routes to Schools. So if a project was identified, say, on the Akron Safe Routes to Schools plan, it would get additional points because we want to help fund and support the Safe Routes programs that the communities are looking for. And then the final thing that you get a lot of points for is sort of what your point A and point B are. So, you know, because we have to look at things from a regional perspective. So if your point A to point B is sort of a rural area with a house every acre, you know, from one intersection to another, it's going to get less points than if you're, say, connecting, you know, the Akron Zoo to somewhere on, you know, Viotum, or a school to a shopping area, or, you know, basically, and it's another way to kind of guess the usage, but that's where we give points because we have to grade. One of the things we have to do is it's the same pot of funding for both regional trails and for sidewalks. So sometimes you get in a little bit of an apples-oranges comparison of the two, and so we try to mix those together, which can sometimes be a little challenging. But that's really what we're looking at is usage, safety, transit components, things like that. And not to talk everyone's ear off, but one of the other things when we talk about data and you look at, you know, not benchmarking, but looking at performance of before and after, you know, one of the things that we struggle with or have struggled with from we're a little behind the times is, the way we count most things, the most roads, is through pneumatic tubes, and those don't ever count bike and ped. And a lot of the software or hardware that's out there to count that stuff is a lot more expensive and a little bit different, and usually takes a video. And so when we do count bike and ped, we've been using people, which is obviously you can only count so many locations over so much time. But one of the things that our staff is looking into is purchasing our first video counting that can count the street, the sidewalks, and pick up everything and count intersections as well as segments. So our hope is that as we procure those, that we'll be able to, we could go out and say, hey, this has been restriped, let's make sure we count it, and then let's count it again. And so that's the hope, is that we're going to get better and better at that collecting data, because that's the part where even on the metro parks and stuff and at trailheads, you have your estimates of counts, but when you're looking at, well, how many people are using this connection to get to the trailhead, metro parks isn't collecting that data. Nobody is. So we're trying to push that forward too a little bit, which I'm hopeful about, that we're going to procure those this spring and start doing more of that. So when we do a corridor count, we're going to be able to have number of bikes, number of peds, number of cars, instead of just number of cars. So we'll get a better idea even how those corridors function, which I think is really overall like a real positive thing for our agency to start collecting. Mr. Mack.
Yes. So I've read this over several times online. Thank you. Number one, the sidewalk inventory. I think I would want to salute AMATS. I remember when that started, when it was first published, and we realized how many sidewalks did not connect to any other sidewalks. And like, you know, where do kids pedal their bicycles when they're 4 years old? You can't even go around your own block. So I think that's a plus for AMATS to show all the communities you really need to connect the sidewalks if you want people to get out and walk. All right. So kudos to the congratulations to the AMATS.
Are you building us up to knock us down?
No! I only have observations. What you do with your observations. I may digress into the Cargo Falls study. Okay, page 19 of your booklet here. Nice picture of traffic divider with bushes, which I suppose you could hire more people to keep them trimmed and watered and fertilized, but maybe there could be a bench put there so people could come to the safety island and sit down. That's an idea. Page 20, I think there was a special effect where the sidewalk ended. Later on, the sidewalk went through. That's perfectly what we need to show people, that it's a lot easier to move down that road rather than wade through grass. And I have to admit, I took the goat path from Chapel Hill Mall underneath Route 8 back in the Cuyahoga Falls down by the old power plant. You know, and there's nothing from Main Street there in Cuyahoga Falls at the gas stations. All the way underneath that bridge and goat paths past either side, either the Route 8 side or where they had the energy field, the coal plant, they reach, Gordon Boulevard, and then there is one sidewalk going down to the small parking lot, the bridge over Cuyahoga. Interesting. Page 24. Furniture, benches. We already had one mention of senior citizens. When I walk through a mall or anywhere and I sit down, I am earlier than a baby boomer person. And it is getting more difficult for me with my titanium knees to get up off of a standard bench. So I would think we would recommend, it doesn't matter to a normal adult in their 30s or 40s or 50s, but the benches could be 6 inches higher, ADA height benches, I'll call them. Right? wherever they're at in the city or in bus shelters or chapel malls or anything else. Benches, because we're having a growing older population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think if you have to put a bench in, if you want to replace a bench, it's a lot easier to stand up if you're not getting from a reclining position up. Even these chairs are without a table. It's a little difficult with artificial legs.
Okay. So you're not a fan of the Adirondacks?
I was when I was 20. It don't matter now when I'm past 70. Okay. Page 23. Last line on the top above the pictures. Back in diagonal parking. I'm going to digress to the Cuyahoga Falls study. They're talking about getting rid of the pedestrian malls in Cuyahoga Falls and opening it back up to car traffic. And they've come up with four different plans. Everything was parallel parking. I didn't see anything, any mention of diagonal back end. Is that good? I've seen diagonal parking pull in a lot of places in the States, but I've never really seen back end parking.
South Main Street.
Mm-hmm. South Main down that way?
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to drive down that way. I'll have to drive down that way. And normally when I hit, I just take Route 877
south. It's safer for exiting.
Yeah, I think a lot
of... I have to see that, but I wonder about the back end. But I guess if you put big enough bumpers back there or something, or bollards to where if they go too far, you know. That hit me that this is a way to slow traffic down. I believe that. We have older drivers that take that into effect. Of course, self-driving cars may be here in 10 years, so it won't be a problem. Right now, they do have one with parallel parking. That's my observation. Top of page 30. Whenever possible, landowners and developers should incorporate pedestrian energy for less than negative impact. As I've driven around northern Summit County here, we have some bus stations with no shelters and other bus stations with, and some bus stops that look like they really could have a shelter put up. Looking online, the cheapest one you want is $500, gives you a nice shelter. I'm thinking at the technical committee, you could look at that and print a few, add it to the stuff going to the policy committee, $500 on the internet, with the point that if communities invest in shelters, people may want to take buses more because there's a place to shelter from the rain and the snow and wind, and this might increase sales. So that's just an out-and-out bid for business owners to make money. You got to put water down a pump if you want it to run. Some of you may not get that. But anyway, you got to give them something in order to draw them in. All right? And I think a bus shelter... Even if it's on your property, I'm thinking of Books a Million over in Chapel Hill area, huge grass area. If they want to buy a bus shelter, a shelter, let's call it that, and put it right across from the bus stop, right now people are standing on the grass, or standing on the sidewalk, or sitting on the grass, they might get more business, get people to use the buses because it's convenient, because they can shelter. All right. Off the pulpit there for the shelter. All right, that's all I have on our plan here.
Anybody else have any comments?
I'm looking for a list of funding for roads.
What the numbers?
That was that word.
One thing we did differently than this year, and I'd be interested in what I guess everyone thinks too, is the last plan. I guess it was 2012. It wasn't last year. This year, we had a very detailed list of sidewalk gaps and crosswalks that were missing. I mean, I think 500 or so, like big list of them. And, you know, then those get funneled down into our regional transportation plan to which communities apply for funding. And so, but it seemed like by the time communities are applying for funding, it's, you know, several years past, and communities are applying for, you know, what they've been studying and what their current plans and what their current needs are. So that huge list we had, while, you know, it kind of highlighted all the gaps, wasn't really out of date, but also wasn't really being used that much. So in this plan, we really try to highlight, you know, if you, when you want to show your elected officials or when, you know, communities are going to use it, like try to really push, like these are different things that you can use to implement those, rather than spend all our time on, you know, figuring out every sidewalk gap in our two counties. So we did change that, and hopefully it's, you know, tried to add a ton of pictures and that kind of stuff that if you're looking at it, or if you're trying to show people your elected officials, you know, kind of things that you want to see in your community, like hopefully this is a tool that you can use to help. But I'd be interested, but we don't have a big list of, we will, and our regional plan, which is what this will feed into, have a list of projects that are fiscally constrained, but for this we don't. But I'd be interested if, you know, if that is something that you find helpful, then we can certainly, you know, we'll do that next time.
I keep seeing these sawhorses and orange cones where Cottle Falls is cutting in all these ADA ramps at the corners. I mean, there's a lot of corners. They're all built with regular curves. And they're going like mad. They're doing so many every year, I guess, trying to upgrade the city to meet the ADA requirements, and which works good for bicyclists and models with strollers and old ladies with walkers, and something has to be done. But whether the sidewalk goes anywhere, I've seen people walking down the street.
My name is Rich Swirsky. I'm a councilman in Akron, Ward 1. A week ago, I was pleased to see that you wrote in here, you specifically mentioned complete streets. And one of the recommendations to make is that local communities...
What page?
Oh, yeah, page 31.
All right, just to know what you're doing about.
Page 31. I'm sure you were still looking at the list of funders.
Page
31, and it says, given disparate nature needs of many villages, townships, and cities within the ASVAT region, the communities should consider appointing committees of various stakeholders to begin comprehensive analysis of their respective pedestrian systems. So I'm not even sure who's around the room exactly, but I get a sense that there's people from different communities, and that seems like a place where everybody here can get a handle in terms of trying to implement some of these wonderful, wonderful recommendations. One of the first steps could be, as we're in that process now, as a matter of fact, a week ago, we passed a resolution saying we're going to set up a committee to study complete streets and to come up with an ordinance. So I'm hoping that other people in the Star Tower besides Akron decide to do a similar kind of undertaking. And it seems like a way to sort of take a step forward and get people out of their inertia and get the planning into the public's into the public view, which also often adds a little charge or impetus to it actually happening. Because sometimes plans, nice plans like this, we all know, right?
Yeah.
No, it's like I'm a teacher, it's like really good curriculum that sits on the wall. Because people haven't interacted with it or been trained in it or had a chance to be part of it. So they're not as likely to use it.
We should add it to the democracy portion of the high school course.
Definitely, definitely.
Because what's the job of the government?
Yeah, well, everybody knows democracy is you vote for one or the lesser of two evils. So. But in this case, you know, I think that's, I'm glad that you recommended that. I'm hoping other people in the room follow up on it. And we'll be in communication with you about what we're doing in Akron. Are there people from different townships here?
Who's
represent Bath, I heard.
Yeah, as citizens, we've got, you know, people from Akron and Cuyahoga Falls and, you know, the region, and then But yeah, I think from an AMATS perspective, what Akron's doing is really exciting because, you know, it's one of those things that we as a regional agency have always said it would be great if communities have these complete streets initiatives or complete street policies. And we've really yet to see that catch on in a lot of the local communities in our region. And so hopefully Akron, you know, you guys can be the guinea pig. They can learn, that everybody else can learn a lot and follow through from, because I think it is a good, it's a good practice, and it's really helpful for us as an agency, because sometimes when, you know, once we fund a project and it gets down into that nitty gritty of design and traffic engineers and all that, sometimes those little pieces can be deemed unimportant and cast aside. And so I think it's really important for the local communities themselves to really embrace that.
Exactly, and Jason, of course, is very supportive of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very instrumental, whatever we come up with.
Yeah. Any other comments on the pedestrian plan?
I'm from Kent, the Kent Environmental Council. I'm really pleased to see this. This is the kind of thing that a lot of us thought would happen 30 years ago, so I'm really pleased to see it. I guess I might like some a roadmap on how to get our council a little bit more on board with complete streets. We recently had an issue of widening a sidewalk on South Water Street in Kent, and it didn't happen because...
Yeah, we're well aware of that project, yeah.
That's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
We need some... I mean, it didn't even come up for a vote.
Yeah.
I thank you, all of you who worked with Jim Bowling, the city engineer, to try to get that in place, but it just didn't happen. So I hope that...
Yeah, and just the type of project you're talking about is, you know, what we're seeing now is... For the older established communities, and this is what, in Cuyahoga Falls, Akron, et cetera, you've got, in some places, you've got a sidewalk, and you've got enough room to widen that sidewalk that would allow some shared use, but you might not have enough room to do a big multi-purpose path. And so, what the city engineer was looking to do was apply to actually widen the sidewalk from, you know, roughly 4 feet to 8 feet. To allow some shared use, so you could have pedestrian and bicyclists.
It's hard for two pedestrians.
Right,
to share
right. That's true.
Sidewalk.
And this is an area very near downtown Kent, and all, you know, so it's a highly used corridor. And we had actually put in our funding policy, thinking of projects like that, that they're eligible. That, you know, we'd widen sidewalks if it can accommodate more users. Unfortunately, that project kind of got squashed in your council. But I think those are still good principles for communities where you have the opportunity to do that. I mean, West Market Street might be an example of that, is that, you know, you might never be able to get it where you could have 12 feet dedicated to bikes, but could you widen the sidewalk to 8 feet or 10 feet to, you know, within the existing right-of-way to at least get it, you know, get people moving back and forth, because that's the corridor that people use. And what we've found typically with bike and ped planning is that, you know, you want to use the same routes that the cars are using because they're the most direct, and that's why the cars use them. So, but unfortunately, those are the most challenging corridors to plan for because they're built out already. But yeah, that's a really good comment, and I think, you know, obviously we've worked with Jim on that. But, you know, trying to push that idea, I think maybe that, I don't know if it's the first time they heard it, but, you know, the idea of that being a really good way to kind of meet in the middle. Really should be encouraged.
Right. Well, you did everything you could. He did everything.
Yeah.
Could.
I know he was very disappointed when it was all said and done. But
he's a very diplomatic guy.
Yeah.
But I think to your point, like in how things sit on the shelf, is, you know, we can do, I think, the best that we can, and then we present it to the policy committee, and then it can stop pretty easily, even if we try to get communities to apply. But I think, you know, kind of that, how we get this from, you know, like to your, like the Complete Streets Council, you know, how we can help bridge that gap in other communities that aren't thinking that way. And in Kent, you know, done a huge amount of Complete Streets and all that stuff.
It's,
you know,
yeah,
so you guys are already...
Yeah, we're
you
say, hey, we got to get there.
Well, like, great things. But, you know, still have issues with, so I think,
sure.
Like, that's a good point for us to look at. We can see if we can add anything, too, but just how we help move this forward within... the municipalities.
And some of the things you're doing already are with the bike, your bike days, bike rides, and anything where you get the public involved, I think, is good. I don't know if you've had one in Camden.
There was done the bike
and
the
storm there, and I think I haven't been on them because I was working at the time, but now.
And the James Walk. The James Walk. Those kind of events, if they're married to some policy champions, I think, and sometimes policy champions will sort of emerge from them. Those kind of things. So keep doing it.
Yeah.
You're doing it. You're doing good. I mean, wow. I've never seen a planning agency do those kind of things. So it was really heartening.
I may address your question about the council. I'm a military guy, too. You don't win battles behind a desk. You get out in the lines and see what's happening.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have a council that sees it that way.
Well, a suggestion. You have a bike shop in Kent. You rent out the number of bikes, the number of council members, and you have them dropped off at their houses. Ride your bikes to the council meeting and then ride back and then put that on the next agenda. How safe was it?
Yeah.
Going at daytime and going home at nighttime, and whether you went on the street or on a sidewalk or no sidewalk.
Did you guys start the whole recycling program?
Yes.
You start a whole recycling center. You can do that.
It's an interesting, I think the whole thing though about awareness is sort of interesting. You know, we've been trying to do these active public meetings, which I think are really successful, but you know, sometimes I think we wonder if should we be advocating too on the council level. You know, should an AMATS representative be talking to councils about these things? It's just another, you know, I hate to use the word like dog and pony show, but just like another way to interact, because you know, you're never going to get every councilman on a bike, maybe with a gun to their head, you know, but which you really shouldn't joke about this day and age. But you know, but I think so. Some people respond to different things, and if that's something that maybe we need to look at further too, is how much should we be engaging councils and city managers and mayors, you know, at their level instead of hoping that they're looking to us. You know, maybe we need to kind of meet them on their turf as well.
I've been to our council meeting. I wouldn't present this at a council meeting. They've got too much other dog and pony to go through. You need a special thing with with the street engineers and the planners and the educators and everybody else say, look, this is what we can do to improve your city or this city, you know.
Mr. Helms.
I object to your comment only because we recently had a contract come through, the original contract for a major, perpendicular to a major artery, Green, and the contract is there. It distinctly did not provide any engineering for bicycle or pedestrian. And when citizens brought it up in council meeting, hey, can we add 1 or 5% to the job so that we can consider these? And the engineer that was going to be under contract with the legislation says, we can just include it. Won't be any extra cost. But had not a citizen, you know, the citizens read the contract seeing that we had just passed 2 years earlier a connectivity issue in Green, that any new routes, any improvements would include this, and here's a job 2 years later of a major, minor artery, wasn't included.
Yeah.
The citizens, where's the money? Well, the citizens have to say, hey, it's our money, spend it this way.
Yeah.
Right.
So the money's there.
Well,
Green
is a little different than Akron. We lost $22 million over 4 years in state and federal money. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying I'm saying go ahead, try to do it, find ways, and that's why I was here. It's not good enemy. I mean, try and find out if there's money. So we can't let it stop us, but it certainly is. And I love what you said, what you said about that the citizen speaking up can get it added to specific projects too.
I talked to Mayor Walters.
So that's, I mean, what you guys have just described is kind of why Streets for All has formed, this group that I was just mentioning, and we are a citizen advocacy group, explicitly designed or created to, because there is an
an awkward position that AMATS finds themselves in with the advocacy question that Curtis was just mentioning, and the need for council members like Rich, who's leading on this complete streets policy here in Akron, but getting council members educated, our elected officials educated, reading the contracts, things like this, and making sure that people understand that there is a community out there of concerned citizens that would like to see pedestrian improvements, bicycle improvements, streets that are safer for everybody, including those with disabilities and whatnot. So we're newly formed. We are having our first larger meeting on December 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Bit Factory on Road Diets, where AMATS has graciously offered to present on, maybe not everybody here, but on Road Diets themselves. We'll hear from on the Better Block that occurred in North Hill, and some of the data that was collected there. And that idea is to help people understand, and when we're looking at other speakers as well, to figure out how we can do Better Block or do Road Diets better, and how we as a community and citizens can better understand the outcomes of these, so that we can advocate for tools like Road Diets, and then as an example. So this group is open to everybody and anybody. And if you'd like to find out more, just come talk to me after this. I can share that with you.
Is there a website?
There's not a website yet. We're working on it. There is a Facebook page, Streets for All. There's a Twitter. And we have a Google Groups where we have like the discussion of what's going on. So I can share all that stuff with everybody. We are working on a website.
I got another question on your milestone dates. Stakeholder review and draft routes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
the
limitation was on a 50,000 population. And obviously, I see, quote, my little local area agreeing, which is half that population is left out of it, and we're trying to be progressive in this, and yet we ain't got no rights near us.
Yeah.
How do we do? Is this something that we have to get our council saying, hey, we want to be stakeholders? Or
I think in reality, at this point, we're still building the network. So just your comments, like one of the things that I was thinking about is, you know, there's always that dream of that like Nemecilla type trail from New Franklin to Green, and
we've got an old trolleyway right next to the
dam. That there's opportunities there that, you know, could fit in as well as just the state routes. So I think, and Krista kind of touched on that earlier, is that, you know, that East Market route that it sort of shows is probably not the best way to go east-west necessarily, or to have one that's south that goes through New Franklin, Green, that way too. So that's purely draft. So we're looking for comments like that, and from citizens, but also, yeah, if Wayne Wheathy or Paul Pickett or, you know, new mayor... Neugebauer? Is that how you say it?
Well, sure.
It scares me when I have to say that name.
Finally, an engineer for mayor.
Yeah. You know, if they make those comments, that'll just embolden it more. So.
Yeah, I think ODOT's completely good with, or at least Chad, who's heading up this redistrict before, like killing that kind of southern one that heads east-west through Akron. And again, we talked about, you know, pulling off the towpath somewhere, you know, Barberton, New Franklin, Clinton, going through like New Franklin and Green over to, you know, connecting somewhere near Hartville. But you know, I think we were trying to, I had reached out to Wayne Wheathy, the Green city planner, that hadn't heard much. So I think if you have any ideas, or if you can get other people that you think like would be a great connection kind of through Green, like, especially with the reservoir, I think that would be
very
specific, like which roads.
Hmm? I mean, it seemed like ODOT from their requirements wouldn't even approach Green as a.
Well, I think that was kind of what they started with. You know, they said, "Here's what are all the big population centers," and then they connected those. And then I think they had a computer almost spit out, looking at road widths and traffic speeds and volumes. Kind of these are like what the computer spit out. Now they're trying to refine them based on what makes sense. But no, I mean, I think like we're tweaking the one that goes along Talmadge Road, along 76 to go up to Kent. So I think it's still, I mean, So that was, I think, a base, but now they're looking at, you know, are there, you know, neat little towns or little spots where we want to, you know, go through? I mean, and especially those that are, you know, like here at Hartville or Kent, or, you know, if there's, you know, going through the reservoir or like the kind of town center area in green.
How will these be numbered? B-17, B-83.
Probably. It's ODOT, isn't it?
Now that is
instead of, you know, a number, will it be actually a, you know, something designated as a bank run?
That could be on
the board. I'd probably put my money on numbers and letters.
Is there somewhere here that is something Jason's been talking about lately, which is the need for protected bikeways?
We talk about it, but I don't think we hit very hard on it, which that's a good point.
I wish you would emphasize that.
Minneapolis, in there, because they got the plus best bike riding in the U.S. city, Minneapolis. They bicycle even in the winter. Here's their main street. They went one street over. They painted it green. If you live on that street, you can back out, come down, get to the next intersection, and go out to the main auto road. You can't drive all the way down that green street because there are no stop signs. It's for bicycles only. Mm-hmm. You can only access the street to go in and out of your driveway. So that became a parallel bike path to all the main traffic where they couldn't widen the street or put in an extra shoulder or sidewalk.
And it's parallel.
It's parallel.
And I know
that's one version of a protected bike path.
Yeah. It's a protected bike. It's one way of doing a protected bike path.
And I know, you know, from Jason's trip to when he went with a few others to Copenhagen, one of the things that they really talked about quite a bit was the need for protected bike lanes, because that's what really makes people feel protected.
Well, that's one of the things I learned from having bike rides at my board meetings, actually working with Emmett, and thank you all for the name, was what a lot of residents said, which was, I'm not driving down West Market on a bike. And so we kind of routed through aqueduct and areas and streets that seem less threatening. But I think there'd be a huge... That is the way to really change the population's attitude toward it. They really, I think they want to, but they don't feel safe.
Right.
And putting out lines on the road or signs make engineers feel good, but it doesn't really have the population.
Could I throw in a negative comment towards that?
Sure.
A bike
I was kind of negative.
My only point about this is be careful what you wish for, because when you have a protected bike lane, when it comes to the winter or it comes to the spring when you want to ride on it, they're not cleaned up.
So that's another maintenance.
That's right. And, if it's a separated lane, you can't get a snow pile on there that you could if it was a marked lane.
Well, you bring it up.
But you're also right from the standpoint that there aren't probably half of the people that ride would not ride in the street.
So we could have a lot more people riding and supporting these measures if they believed that they were safe.
But if the bike lane that is not cleaned off or taken care of, they don't ride anymore.
So you're bringing up a good point.
It's a cool way to take a look at it.
Right. It's another maintenance need that the city would have to be addressing. And
you did have a protected bike lane. What was it?
South Street.
South Street that had
bollards that got stolen.
That all got knocked down and dropped out.
Definitely. You know, the thing about Market Street, which is always interesting, because I agree, it's like it is the main arterial where I think there would be so much desire from Highland Square to the University of Athens. It makes so much sense.
Yes.
But what are we going to do about, what I think about with the protected is the curb, there'd have to be access management. You couldn't have all those driveways the way they are now, because if cars are going to pull out, then they're going to pull right onto that, they're going to pull right onto that protected bike lane. Yeah.
Okay.
And, so it's like, to me, to
that's
do it right, you almost would have to reconstruct that road, like really new curbs, and almost like a Euclid corridor type design that would, that would really be an emphasis on, rapid bus, the preemptive signals or something like that, but with the bike network that you could really create that protected, and that's, then you're really talk about finding the money.
Right.
But so in the short term, it's sort of like that challenge of, you know, because that's the road that makes the most sense. But nobody wants to touch it because they're scared of it. I mean, from the standpoint of the amount of traffic that's already there and you know, the roadway side. So
may I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes. Please make final.
And they'll kick us out in about 15. So,
I mean, both your comments to I really value what you're saying, and I think it's really important. I'm glad you're saying it to me too. now, and rather than then, another important thing would be you try to connect with the CSO project,
yeah,
and all the development that involves, and you know, often the we have to get the CSO connected with our other planning. And that's one of the things we're going to try and do in Akron. But I think there ought to be some mention of that in here. Mm-hmm. The need to try and do that in other communities have some version of that.
I don't know if anybody else has got the $1 billion price tag.
Yeah.
the combined sewer overflow system Akron's working on.
Right, right, but sort of looking at this holistically with other things that are happening in your
I think that, doing it as part of other projects, even if they're smaller.
Yeah, yeah, you probably do refer to that in here, but for Akron, especially the CSO.
It's a good comment that we should consider that.
I mean, make that, really emphasize that.
Yeah, at Akron, they're knocking down buildings for that and for the central interchange.
Right.
Coming down. I don't know if any of that bare property is usable, other than four-wheeled vehicles, bicycles and pedestrians.
We're knocking a lot of things down.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to cut off this conversation, but I do want to, if there's anything else open, or, you know, we try to at least have a little bit of a section if there's any other questions or comments about any projects or anything. You know, I know I heard a couple of people talking about Front Street and Cuyahoga Falls, and you know, they're definitely undergoing a pretty exciting planning project. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We're still waiting to hear. Akron was looking for $4 million in PE to do the central interchange left ramps going down to 77, ODOT, I should say, not Akron, but was looking for that. We're thinking they're going to get that because the rest of the project's fully funded. The main Broadway, you know, demolition is taking place. The Freedom Trail is working its way down to Mill Street right now, and then it's going to be looking at going to the Transit Center and in some way across Broadway, High, and Main to get over to the Spaghetti Warehouse and connect to the towpath. You know, we're a little concerned about that phase for the reasons I just said, because it might look like, you know, if the bridge is the only option to get over, say, Broad, that's not a very good option in terms of cost. So that's, you know, we're concerned about that project a little bit, I think, just because from the, you know, with the main Broadway project, what you're almost going to have is cars, you know, getting off the highway, and in some ways almost be on a limited access road, and the first light they're going to come to is Rosa Parks, which is right by the Transit Center. I don't know if you guys can visualize that. So you potentially would be asking people on the Freedom Trail to cross almost at, like, if you can imagine how the Interbelt and Howard Street is now, or, you know, the highway traffic's coming up. You know, but in this case, they're going to be coming down that hill, and that's the light that's going to stop them. And so if we do at grade there, you know, are we setting ourselves up for real bad, you know, bike accidents potentially or something like that? And,
I read in Westside Leader, I think about a week ago, mention of a project called the Oak Park Renewal Project. It sounded like it was in the Interbelt corridor.
It's right adjacent to it, yes. Do you know where Glendale Cemetery is? It's kind of up on the top of the hill there. And it's one of Akron's oldest neighborhoods.
I used to live there. Wall Street.
Oh, then one of my told
I just curious. It didn't really mention. Yeah. It said Dart and Ran, which sounded like the Interbelt project. I was wondering if maybe there's another project that spurred.
Well, part of the CSO project is going to be down there on Dart and Ran and up the hill. I don't know if you read about the permaculture workshops. Mm-hmm. There were some people organize some workshops to present permaculture ideas, and part of the workshop was actually getting students to design projects that are kind of like complete streets. To me, the language is a little different, but Mike Zapp, who owns property in Oak Park and a neighborhood leader, also were involved with the planning of a potential project in that area. If you're interested, actually a few of us are going to be meeting. It happens to be my ward, so
okay.
I'd be glad to talk to you about it. Yeah, if you want to get involved in it.
Curious if I have a Ward 6, be happy to get involved. That'd be my neighborhood.
Yeah, you probably have a lot of nice feelings for it. Were you around when we did the goats over there in Glendon?
I was out of town during that time. Yeah. Read about it.
Solar technology is moving on, and it's getting better. And we're talking about going underneath dark bridges at night. This is a planning item for the TAC. You can put up solar collector panels and run the wire to a light under there, and you don't have to worry about digging trenches for street lights like we use now. They become standalone, and if they break, just go put another one in. Solar panel, wire, light, idea for the TAC. On the central interchange, not that I want to make you guys work harder, but a little plot, little map area, maybe City of Akron wants to do it, put it in the Beacon Journal somewhere on site saying, here's what's been torn down this quarter, torn down this quarter, here's where the first cement's going to be laid for the redo. Sort of a quarterly update, but I don't know if AMAS wants to do that, or Akron wants to do that, or Beacon Journal wants to do that.
We have something like that for the CSO project on the website.
Yeah, well, because I'm not worried about the CSO, because I don't care what part or not, but I go through the central interchange all the time.
Yeah,
so
it's a good idea.
Like, it's kind of like updates once a quarter. Or something.
It'd be nice to let you know before you drive your car down there.
Well, they closed the Broad Boulevard Avenue for the railroad track repair on the 30th, and they've already got it down.
Cool.
On the website, we have these amendments to the TIP that we're doing. It says it's going to be in Ravenna, whatever, this road to that road, or in Akron, whatever. There's a Google Map app that if you put that into the description online, you click on it, and you go to the Google Map, and it'll arrow down right to where that site is. Like, let's say it's an intersection. So it would give the reader an idea of where this work is going to take place, one end or the other, you know, like 0.2 miles from this road to that road. If you put the Google Map app in the job description, anybody could look and see what road is being affected. Something new, something technology. Thank you.
Seth's going to do that for us.
I'm just saying it's available.
Yeah.
Cities can use it.
And that's something that we are trying to get our... we've been talking internally about trying to take advantage of the mapping in the GIS programs that we have to get that on our website so that we can do things like that. So that's something that we do want to do. But I think it makes a big difference when you can tell. And the TIP, you know the entries to the TIP. Transportation Improvement Program, for those of you that don't know, is our kind of big list of capital improvement projects that we have federal money in. And typically those aren't very... citizen layperson friendly. There's PID numbers and, projects from mile marker 1.76 to, whatever. So that would be something that would be good to have.
It would just help the average reader. If they clicked on it, they could see where the job is. I make a motion we accept the next year's calendar.
Oh, yeah, we jumped right over that.
Second.
Rock and roll.
Everybody like next year's calendar?
Yeah, and actually, just to bring your attention to that before we go, we are planning on meeting quarterly. So lucky for everyone, we can be back here in January. Then we have a meeting in April, in July, and then as this meeting was supposed to be in November, this time around, it got pushed back. This next year, it's back to being in November. So.
Maybe we could work later and have it in the Akron Council.
As you say, though, if anyone has topic ideas or things they think, we expanded a little bit this year, but I think we could go more. Or if there's tours or different places you'd like to check out, just let us know, though. We're always trying to improve what we're doing. But
yeah, and Bill, I think your point about the central interchange and the mapping and stuff is that
the library will close.
I think we can do a better job of getting from ODOT some of those maps that really do show, at least it might not tell you when it's going to be, but it can show you which parcels are going to go, what the road configuration is going to look like. Because those documents, even though ODOT does its best to do public involvement, those tend to get like buried.
The Journal had a list of buildings that had to be bought out. Well, if you know the area, you know the area.
Right.
If you don't, it's just, hey, here's an area that's going to be leveled, and here's an area that's going to have a new just to keep the people in the town up.
Along those lines, ODOT's, on the website, they actually have maps with the new project overlaying.
Oh, do they?
Already. They have the Broadway project on there. The
Make a click on that on your website and then go to the ODOT website.
That information, obviously, I'm a former architect of Timberland here, so I know all that it means.
It's not all.
It helps a lot versus, as you said, mile marker here.
All right, well, thank you. I think we had a great discussion tonight. I appreciate everybody coming and spending time with us. And we look forward to working with everybody and hearing from you soon. So thank you.
You're all good.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.